As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the 3-0 show with your hosts today, Eno Saris and Britt Giroli. We are missing, sadly, our host, Derek Van Riper. And so today I hope that you can look past any foibles that your host might put upon you. I may not have as good a grasp on the show as Derek does. Please come back soon, Derek.
On the brighter note, nobody wrote the rundown that we forgot to read this week.
That's so right.
Got that going.
So we're even more seat of the pants than usual. I thought we'd just start with that no-no last night, because I had one of those group chat moments, where somebody was like, can you have to put on the Angels game? And like Rendon just hit from the left side. He noted right-handed hitter hit a home run. I didn't even know it was a no-no. I was looking at that. I was, pitcher, a position player pitching, all that. Did you have like a chat moment? Did you jump on that game when you're that was so crazy last night? I think the Angels won like 12-0.
Yeah, I got an alert, and for those who aren't aware, as Eno said, the Angels did win 12-0. 22-year-old Angels starter Reed Detmers recorded a no-hitter in his 11th big league start against the Tampa Bay Rays. So I got an alert, I think maybe in the 6th or 7th inning, that it was in progress. And I'm like, who? Because this guy's been pitching very much. And second, I don't know how you felt about this, Eno, but usually a lot of times with no-hitters, it's like a really, really bad team. So I was like, is this really going to happen? Like, the Rays are pesky. They're not a formidable offense by any means, but they're pesky, right? And you're like, okay, someone's going to poke one in. Someone's going to find a hole. That was when I turned the game on and got really into it. So I didn't have the group chat moment that you did. but I was really not sure it was going to happen. I don't know if you felt, did you feel more certain towards the end? I was not sure it was going to happen. And I think Anthony Rendon hitting a home run in his first appearance from the left-handed side was almost as impressive, if not more impressive, when you think about how hard it is to hit at the big leagues to now hit from the other side. I don't know. It might have been just as impressive as the no-no.
Yeah, I think the Rays offense is really interesting because they're kind of like this mix and match offense where maybe, maybe they're not as good against righties, and they're also kind of strike out a lot. So if you account for the trop, which is a tough park to hit in, and you kind of adjust for parks, they're a top five offense this year. But they also are striking out at a rate that only, let's see here, about 10 teams are striking out more than the Rays. So I think that's something that Detmers used to his advantage. I think that he has really good secondaries, and that's what like sort of allowed him to turn the lineup over so many times. Good secondary pitches, not just an all fastball guy. And good command. So, you know, those things worked in his favor. It is interesting to me, though, sometimes that, like, you know, the list of players that have no hitters, it's not like the list of the best pitchers in the game.
No.
It's a strange thing where, I've seen there were some no hitters with like six walks.
That's the Edwin Jackson special.
That's the Edwin Jackson special, yeah. Right?
Yes, you're right. You're right. It is interesting, though, as you mentioned, but he only had two strikeouts, which I guess is what made him so efficient, right? Because if you're a high strikeout guy, you're a high pitch count guy.
That's right. And that's why you get pulled early, and they would talk about how, you know, as a young guy, you're not there for 120 pitches or 130 pitches. So how many pitches did he throw?
108. So it was never really like a discussion.
Do you know that no qualified starting pitcher this year is averaging 100 pitches per start?
Wow. No, I didn't. That is a very interesting. I mean, before this start, this guy had topped out at 6 innings with the Angels last year, and 5 this season. So if he wasn't efficient, this was going to be like a Clayton Kershaw moment, right? Where they pulled him with a no-hitter.
100%.
Don't you think if he had 100 pitches in the 7th inning, we would never have seen this?
Yeah. I mean, it could be a blueprint in some ways for making it work. The Rays have the 7th largest ground ball rate. So you kind of get those grounders and move the lineup along, but I just love the text I got. It's just like full of, you know, exclamation points and typos. Like, he wrote Tendon, of course, instead of Rendon, but it was such a great moment. And it was kind of a bookend for me because that gave me a sort of a great feeling. And then, you know, today I think you published an amazing feel good story that, between the news that my mom is sending me a box of beer. Hi, Mom. Thanks for the beer. I'm excited for it. And this like crazy no hitter, your story about Frank Lopez was just really uplifting. And, you know, we do so much reporting on negative aspects, and you've broken some big stories that, don't have a happy ending, in other words. And this one just seemed like, I was just like, yes, like, you know, I need more of this in my life. And so you could just tell us a little bit about Frank Lopez and what he's had to overcome to even, you know, throw a bullpen this year for the Guardians.
Yeah, so as you said, I feel like we sometimes are the bearers of bad news. So it was so nice to have a positive story that had a happy ending. I have a friend in the Guardians organization that had told me about him. It was in the depths of the lockdown, the lockout, rather, when I was just kind of bored and looking for stories and texting people I knew in various teams. And they gave me this. They're like, well, we have a guy, his name's Frank Lopez. He almost died in an accident on the lake last year, and now he's throwing bullpens. And I was like, wait, what? Tell me more. You know, yeah. this is crazy. And then the more you uncovered layers of this, like, it was multiple surgeries. It was screws in his head. It was a 50-pound weight loss. This wasn't just like this had happened to a kid who is not a prospect. If you're listening to this and you're trying to Google Frank Lopez, it's not the guy who comes up on Baseball Reference. This is a young 19-year-old lefty.
Doesn't have an inning, right?
Has not pitched. Yes, has not pitched at any level, because when he signed, it was right before COVID. It was like March of 2020. There was no minor league season in 2020. And so he hasn't had the opportunity to. That was when this accident happened. He's been rehabbing since really the spring of 2020. And so he doesn't throw super hard. He's not a top prospect, but he just has this story that I think we can all resonate with, right? Like, of resilience. You know, you talk to him or you read that story and you're like, okay, I'll take my problems back, right? So that old adage, don't throw our problems in a pile. You would take yours back real quick, right? I mean, I just can't imagine, you know, being in a foreign country. It's the first time he came to the U.S. Cleveland paid for him to come to the Cleveland Clinic. You know, he's sitting in his bed with screws in his head. He doesn't understand the language. He can't eat without pain. He can't sleep. He can't move. And the television's on in another language. That, to me, just sounds like torturous. Before he even had this surgery. So there are like, so many obstacles that he had to go through. And then to lose that much weight, to now be so far behind your teammates, right? Like, there's just so much that goes into that mentally, physically, and emotionally to get back to where he is. That I think you read that story and you're like, I got nothing to complain about. Like, life is great over here. You know, that's what's so great about these stories. I think we all,
we all
just like kind of get lost in our own problems and our own day to day. Like, the odds are stacked against me. And then you read this story and you're like, okay, no, the odds were actually really stacked against this guy. He was told he was going to die in a hospital in the Dominican Republic. And whether he ever makes it or not, if he has kids and grandkids and whatever, these are all people that wouldn't exist if he didn't have the fortitude, if he didn't push through, if he didn't make it. And I think that that's just really important to remember.
You know, that fear, you know, in the hospital in the Dominican Republic, that fear that, you know, he wasn't going to make it and that they didn't really have what they needed to help him. It's something that really resonated with me and, you know, brought me to tears a little bit because I was born in Jamaica and I have this, you know, this crazy story. My mom was 30 and she couldn't get a midwife because all the midwives said she was too old to have a baby. And so she like got one midwife to give her 12 hours. And so she waited 6 hours. And this is exactly the kind of story you need to hear.
Yes, it is. 7.5 months pregnant. Let's hear your labor story.
So sorry, but it is a little
bit
relevant.
Now.
It's relevant to Frank Lopez at the end, and I'm just sorry you had to hear it. But there is some relevancy. Just stick with me. And so she had labor for, you know, 6 hours before she called the midwife, and then there was 12 hours with the midwife, and then the midwife said it's a breech and ran out. It wasn't a breach, but she was like, the time's up. I'm out of here. And so my mom had to get into a taxi to get to the hospital. And so in Frank's story, that you have this like, you know, it was like a 45-minute ride normally, but they had to take, you know, 2 hours or something because they had to go around the potholes. Like, they did not go around the potholes for mom. So she's like in labor. They're blasting through the potholes, bang, 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 all the way to the hospital. They get there. It's 3 a.m. There's no doctors there. And so, you know, she's exhausted, can't push anymore. They don't know what to do. And the nurses actually rolled me out. Like, they got on top of her and pushed for her, like rolled with their bodies to like push me out, which is not something that people do anymore. But they just weren't, they didn't have a doctor. They weren't prepared to give her a C-section. They weren't just able to do that. It's just, that was my experience in Jamaica sometimes with healthcare, was just like, I'm sorry, we don't have that machine. We don't have that ability. We don't have that expertise. If you would like to pay for it, that'd be great. But like, we don't have that. So just those details of the potholes and how it turned out, and like just how the guardians had to come in and kind of, you know, they had to do a lot of they kind of paid for some stuff and brought him to Cleveland to get the surgeries he needed. And I mean, there's a little tinge of sadness to that, you know, that like if he didn't play baseball, you know, he might have had a different ending. But I just think that he will be like sort of, not to speak for him, but just like the details of like how people feel about him and the people around him, I bet you he's going to be such such an uplifting person to be around. And if he doesn't make it as a hurler, like I could see him making it as a coach, like as you know, cause is that true? In the story, it sounds like everybody's just like super happy to be around him and like super rooting for him. And everyone's just happy. He's like, he's okay again.
Yeah. So many people in the organization are rooting for this guy. And you're right. If he doesn't make it, I mean, what's remarkable to me is during this rehab, he learned English fluently. Yeah. You could have a conversation with him. He graduated high school, the equivalent to high school in the Dominican. So, you know, he really kind of maximized this second chance now, which I think is awesome. But you're right. You bring up a great point And I thought kind of reading this, like, man, we don't realize how lucky we are just to have the healthcare aspect and just have paved roads, like little things you don't realize that if this were to happen to you or I, we'd go to the hospital, we'd get it fixed. This guy went months in the Dominican because they simply couldn't figure out what was wrong, sent him home in a neck brace, and that was that. So, you know, then he goes to the Cleveland Clinic, which is like, you know, the creme de la creme, one of the best hospitals in the country. So it was just such a vast difference. And these are things we take for granted. And I also think we miss, as a sport, a lot of the stories of these young Dominican players simply because of the language barrier. You know, if I didn't have a friend tell me about this guy, there's no way I would have ever crossed paths with Frank Lopez or anyone on Cleveland's Dominican Summer League team. So I do think that, you know, there's so many...
Do you speak Spanish?
Great...
Was that part of the reporting?
I do speak Spanish. He had a translator anyway, just because they're so fast. I'm not fast enough
but
yet. But
you got some details in there that he wouldn't have known almost.
Yes, I did. I did speak to a lot of other people as well. And we've been texting. He texts me in English. I text him in Spanish. You know, because he doesn't want to talk Spanish to me because he's learning English. Right. You know, so we go back and forth. But it is a good reminder that, like, these guys have such great stories and we shouldn't let the language barrier kind of get in the way of getting to know these guys.
Yeah, I've definitely... I'm working my Duolingo, but I think I need to do better. Duolingo is fine, but it's like, it's 2 minutes a day. It's not giving me, I've been doing it for like 2 years and I can order a shirt at a store. It's like, that's not going to help me talk to these guys about nasty curveballs.
Right. We need like a baseball for Spanish class that just like really gets into the baseball lingo, right? Because it's totally different than learning very formal Spanish.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, there's
an interesting segue here. So, like, I think that the perfect writer, you know, like, if you could smush the two of us together, maybe you get the perfect writer. That's why we collaborate so much. You know, it's like,
yes,
the perfect writer would speak Spanish, would, you know, be good at analytics, you know, have good connections in the front office, have good connections with players, go to games, go to the clubhouse, you know, have all these sort of features and sort of in one. It's almost impossible. It's just too—it's too much for one brain.
You're right. We are the super team, though. That is why we're on podcasts and stuff together. We have totally different brains, totally different strengths, but hopefully different voices.
Yeah, and that's
looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
That's my segue here to another thing we've been thinking about and like becomes very obvious without Derek here that like there's always in a broadcast team, there's always a perfect number, there's a way to have a sort of cohesion and people have their roles. And so today we're doing our best without Derek, and we have not to be gendered, but we have like a three-man booth. We have like a three-person booth here when we're making the show usually. And we've been seeing these different, these different broadcasts across the league. We've seen Apple now, YouTube, and these kind of new wave. They haven't had a Prime one yet, but they're gonna have some Prime at some point, I think.
I think so. And Peacock, right? NBC?
And Peacock. Yeah. So I don't know if I've seen like every single one of them. I'm sorry if I missed them, but I have seen Apple. I have seen YouTube. And you know, they are trying new things. And we're not here to like sort of call out any specific booth for being bad or you know, whatever. But, you know, and then we might visit booths. Like I was on with the Marlins booth, you know, while they were calling a game. Paul Severino was so kind to have me on with JP Arencibia and him to kind of do a little stat casty thing for a couple innings in Florida. And it just occurred to me that, like, to me, I think the perfect booth would have a player in it, you know, to have that kind of, you know, just the on the field experience, and also just sometimes the minutia of like day to day life, and just the drills, the things that they did, and a knowledge of the game from playing it. I think you'd have a really good play by play that I'd probably put the emphasis on, maybe the voice. You know, I think of John Miller. I love John Miller's voice, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he always says the right thing a million times. You know, I don't think, you know, whatever. Maybe he's wrong about things sometimes, but like the voice is just, it just makes
yes.
me, I'm just totally. Like, oh, I just feel.
It's like Gary Thorne. Gary Thorne was always terrific yeah. too. Great.
I know, it's always just like feeling, oh, I'm comfortable now. I'm good. Yeah, it's good. Nice. Thanks, John. And then I think, you know, this is what I'm sort of positing to you, that I think most booths should have like a nerd, you know, like a someone who's like really up to date on the analytics. So I wondered if you had some thoughts about what your perfect booth looked like.
Yeah. So I think, and in case someone puts this together, this is not, you know, and I trying to axe DVR, because we're talking about how three person booths can be tough.
Right. Well, I was just advocating for one. So it's your fault if you say that you don't like three person booths. I'm going to tell DVR all about that.
I think that they're tough because I think if you don't get the right people, there's too much talking, right? You need a play-by-play guy that's okay with silence, but you also need the other two people to be okay with silence.
To be quiet.
What I remember growing up watching baseball, you know, in the 90s, not to date myself, but even early 2000s, was listening to the sounds of the game on TV. Nothing bothers me more than when I'm watching a game and I can't ever hear the sounds of the game because the announcers are talking every second. And I think we're seeing that more and more as we put more people in the booth. You know, the three people booth, you just have a lot of cooks in the kitchen. I think it can work, but you need people that are okay with pauses. There is a powerful thing when something is happening, like in Detroit, Miguel Cabrera just recently joins the 3,000 hit club. I want to hear what that sounds like. I want to hear the announcer announce it, and then I want him to shut up, and I want everyone else to shut up so that I can hear the crowd, so that I can hear what's going on there. And I think we kind of get away from that sometimes when we have inexperience in the booth, when we have too many people in the booth, when we have people who just don't really mesh well together. That is my biggest issue. I'm okay with the former player and the nerd and the play-by-play guy. I also think, and I like the idea that a lot of teams have done, where they kind of rotate that third spot. Like maybe the nerd is 40 games and it's like a regular color analyst for another 40 games. And it's another former player after that. You know, maybe it's a minority. Like I like mixing it up, that third chair, a little bit, and keeping those same two, assuming the player's good. This brings me to my second point. I am pro player. I love players. I've been in clubhouses for 15 years now. My issue though, and I've heard this from a lot of players that are good in the booth, is players think just because they played, they don't have to do the homework on the games, right? They don't have to be in the clubhouses. They don't have to be in the pregame manager interviews. And they do. There's only so much that your personal playing experience translates into that day's game. You need to be talking to players. You need to be doing your homework. You need to know what's going on the other side. And I think players are surprised by how much legwork that takes. I think even in the NFL, you see it. I think they are surprised with how much prep work goes into broadcasts. Just because you're Tony Romo doesn't mean you can just skate by. You still need to be preparing. So I think the former player angle is great. If the player is into it, if they think they can show up at 6 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game eat some dinner, schmooze on the field with players, and then just pontificate about when they played, that's not a good broadcast at all, yeah. in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I can think of, you know, some iconic calls where there's long pauses, you know, and sort of allows the crowd noise to kind of filter through. I think even in sort of suspense building, even if the crowd is not being really loud, suspense building sometimes can be with like a, you know, can be like just a couple words, right? Because everyone's watching, like, you know, and it might be the difference sometimes between TV and radio, where radio, you kind of have to describe what's happening a little bit more. You might have to talk more. But in TV, I think a lot of times being quiet helps add to the suspense, brings you to the edge of your seat. You know, it's kind of like if you have a TV on in the room and then you kind of hear quiet, like the game goes quiet, like you would, I think you would look over, you know what I mean? What? Like if you weren't like really looking. So there is a cadence there. And then yes, 100%, the best announcers that I've ever seen, the best announcers that, you know, that I've worked with, you know, make sure they're in the dugout, at least if they're not in the clubhouse, you know, so that they're around the players. They, you know, they call players over, and, you know, they're a little bit older in San Francisco, so they're not as mobile. So, you know, a lot of times they'll be in the dugout, sort of call players over and have little powwows with them. But they're trying to gather knowledge about the team from all aspects. They'll talk to front office people and team and players, and just, you know, have something to say other than, you know, well, back in my day. So I agree with you on that. But I still think that, like, you know, the ideal booth, like if you had well-researched stuff, I mean, what it would take is everyone comes to the table with 5-6 pages of notes, and then uses one of them, like, you know, uses like 20% of the notes. Like that's sort of, I remember when I called a game with Vince Scatronio out here, you know, for the A's, and I had so many notes, but I was like, I need to let him talk because he's going to, you know, call the game. And so I was just really just, yeah. And you know me, like I want to talk. So it's like, I was just like, shut up, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, this is interesting. I think I have a second. Let me put this one out there. But I got a little bit lucky because it was a blowout. And so then almost nobody cares and you can just talk about whatever you want to talk about. But yeah, in an ideal situation, the pacing matters and stuff like that. You know, how much does the look and feel of a broadcast matter? I mean, there's score bugs. It matters a little bit. Sometimes when it's like the score bugs, like ugly and 80s style or something, you're just like, come on, people, like try a little harder. I liked, you know, on the Apple cast, I think it looks nice. I think they're using new, like good technology. Like maybe it's 4K or something. Like it looks crisp. It looks really nice. And I think the score bug and everything looks really nice. It's weird though, because they're also broadcasting information that does not seem correct. They're like often talking about this player has like a 42% chance of reaching base. And I'm like, I don't think that's possible. His OBP is like 330. It's a 0-0 count. Like what number, like, what are you looking at here? And my theory, and this is for the nerds who listen, is that they're overfitting. So this is like sort of a data thing. That they're overfitting the data. And basically what I'm saying is that, like, they're looking at that person's OBP against right-handers who throw fastball sliders. And what happens is the sample shrinks. And so then they're like, oh yeah, this player has a 420 OBP against, you know, right-handers that are all fastball slider. You know, oh, so he was like 4-for-10 or something. You know what I mean? Like, so I think there's something happening there with the data, because that part doesn't seem right. But how would you compare and contrast the Apple look and feel to the YouTube one? It's just kind of distinctly different.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the like clean, crisp interface of Apple. It reminds me of just Apple in general, like Apple stores, right? Like everything is clean and minimalist. It's not crowded.
Mostly about the picture you're looking at.
Yes, mostly about because like, here's what I think people don't realize. And this is what I think the mistake that people in the booths have when they over talk is, people are turning on the game because they want to watch the game.
it's revolutionary. It's what are you talking about?
Very, very simple, but I think it gets forgotten. No one is tuning in because they're like, you know what? I want to hear broadcaster X talk for 3 hours. You are a supplement to the game. Now, broadcasters have great legions of followings, followers. I understand that fans feel like they're in their home every night. They know them. But at the end of the day, you are turning that game on because you want to see what happens to the players. So anything that takes away or distracts from that is going to make the viewing experience worse.
Yeah.
So that's why I like Apple for that nice visual, that clean, crisp visual. I have the same issue you do with some of the stats. And because you're so into stats, I think maybe you'll agree with this. I don't know. But I feel like the whole point of stats and analytics and numbers and incorporating them into the broadcast is teaching viewers things they don't know that are relevant to the game, mm-hmm. right? There is no point in overloading the average person with numbers that have nothing to do with what's going on.
1,000%. And it seems like,
yes, and it seems like that's what's going on with the Apple broadcast with some of the like probability stuff that they're throwing out. I think it's a great asset to have someone like you explain numbers and explain stats, but you don't want to get into a 20-minute conversation in the weeds like that. This is not the time for that, right? And so you just don't do it.
The two most complaints that we did get some complaints about my Marlins appearance. The two most complaints were he was talking too much. But I in my defense, I would say I came on for 2 half innings. So I had to say something while I was there. It was more like an interview. It wasn't like I was in the booth. If I'd been in the booth for the whole 9 innings, I would have shut up a lot more and I would have gotten stuff in a little bit. And the other one was they didn't care. And there I did have some there was some like I was telling a story and then it worked out exactly as I said. Like I was talking about Avisel Garcia's first swing on first pitch rate. Like he's like through the roof. He's one of the most aggressive people on first swing. And then he swung at the first pitch, you know, and I talked about how, you know, you're most likely to get a fastball on first pitches. And so it was relevant to what was in the game, but there were other times where I was talking about stuff and it didn't happen to line up immediately. And people were like, why was he talking about that? It wasn't, but that's because I was on for 2 half innings. I would take what you were saying about stats and take it almost a little bit further. I think the stats are there to tell a story. Like if they don't help tell a story, what you're doing is telling a story about this game. And if they don't help tell the story and they're just tangential or they overload. And I think that way about most of the kind of launch angle exit velocity reports on homers, I feel like people are checking a box there and they're going to just tell you what the launch angle and exit velocity were. And like, even me as a stat guy, I don't care unless you're like, oh man, he hit that one 115. That's the second hardest hit homer of the year. Yeah. Then you're like, and then you could talk about like, let's say Aaron Judge hits a homer, Stanton hits a homer and it's like 115 and it's the second hardest hit homer of the year. And then you can tell a story about how Stanton is the guy who broke StatCast. He's the guy who has hit all the hardest hit balls in the history of StatCast and how there's something so amazing about this guy who's so powerful. Now you're telling, you know, you're kind of adding to the moment. You're adding to this big Stantonian. They even call it Stantonian, you know, like the Stantonian moment, you know, by sort of giving some context. But if you're just like, oh, and that ball was hit 106 in a 32 degree angle. I mean, like I'm a nerd. I'm not into that. I don't want to hear that.
It's really interesting because you're right. Like, have we become too obsessed with like force feeding stats in the broadcast? Because a generic exit velo launch angle, like you said, not that interesting. What would be more interesting is like every morning that Aaron Judge has blueberry pancakes, he hits a home run. That's cool. That's right? Like, oh, he had him this morning and he
and also not meaningful in a statistical sense, but
no.
But I would still, I would laugh about that. It'd be a funny thing.
Great. Like on a broadcast, that's a great nugget, right? Like people are like, holy hell, this guy's eating these pancakes. Whenever he does that, he hits a home run. Like that's crazy. Like those are the stuff you can bring to the broadcast that aren't just numbers, is just being in that clubhouse. And I do find it interesting that you said, is it harder than we think? Because you're the only one who's been in a booth to not talk. Is shutting up the toughest part about being on a broadcast?
I think so. I mean, if you've prepared, maybe if you haven't prepared, you're just like, well, I don't have anything to say right now. But if you prepared, like I had all those pages, I wanted to get that stuff that I'd worked so hard on. And, you know, I think that we are generally getting better at these sort of things. And my evidence for this is the Nerdcast. So the we used to have these alternate casts. I don't know what they were officially called, and I don't think Mike Petriello would be mad at me for calling it Nerdcast, but because we collectively sort of called it the Nerdcast. Mike Petriello was on it from MLBAM or MLB.com. And Eduardo Perez was on it, and they had a couple rotating other people that would do it with him. That's gone. So you could use that as evidence and be like, oh, it didn't work, and so, you know, we're going the wrong direction or whatever, or you may not have liked it, and so you're like, haha. The producer of the Nerdcast is now the producer of Sunday Night Baseball. Like I don't know if he's the producer, but they took that producer and folded him in. Eduardo Perez is now on Sunday Night Baseball. And David Cone, who might be the nerdiest athlete that there is now on the regular cast. And so, you know, I think Mike is even, you know, and Bam and the researchers there are even working to kind of incorporate some of the statistical nuggets and some of the background research to kind of give that the Nerdcast feel. And I think that it actually, I think it changed broadcasting a little bit. And it'll be one of those things where the flame blew bright and it was only there for a couple of years and some people will never know it existed. But I do think it showed, like what I was saying, that like you can use these stats to tell a story. You have to pick the stats right. You have to pick the moment right. You have to over prepare and under deliver in terms of like not delivering every single thing on that piece of paper that was given to you or that you put together. So it is. Yeah. I'm not critiquing any one announcer. You know, if you're trying to read between the lines and be like, oh, he doesn't like this or this or this. I do like especially that. Apple and YouTube seem to be trying different combinations of people and with different backgrounds. And so I think somewhere in this, we're going to come out on the other side with something closer to my ideal booth where we're like, we've got people of different backgrounds. We've got people of different sort of expertises. And they're also adding in the expertise of how to call a game, which is what you're kind of talking about in terms of not talking too much and knowing how to kind of tell relevant stories and doing your background research. So, yes. You know, this is not probably true from city to city. Someone's listening to this and be like, well, my guys are terrible.
well, see, in my opinion, David Cone is the player who does his homework. He's like the pedestal.
100%.
The player who does his homework. And we're not going to call out bad booths or people we don't like, no. But I will ask you for your favorite booth. Mine is the Mets. I think SNY is head and shoulders above most of the other booths. And they're a three-man booth. So they are a booth that understands when to shut up and when to allow the moment to play out. And they're not afraid to be critical. Do you have a favorite booth?
There's a slight bit. I've listened to that one a fair amount. There's a slight bit of like that John Smoltz and I don't love what's happening in the game today. Keith sometimes is like, you know, a little bit critical of the game today. And then Ron might get into it too. And it's like, well, okay, but this is the game we've got. And like, you know, like not all of us are pining for the old days. You know, there's a little bit of that and a little, you know, not always 100% on the Sabre side, but yes, in terms of delivery, how they work. And they know when, like in the eighth inning of a blowout, that's the time when Keith will talk about, you know, almost getting ripped off by a con and, you know, or his, you know, his pets or, you know, like all these great stories.
Are they your favorite too? Or
I really like their.
Okay. Who's your
chemistry.
Favorite booth? Who's your favorite booth?
What is my favorite booth? I really like Boog. I have more like sort of favorite one-offs. I really like Boog and Cone. Like if I could get Boog and Cone together, I might not even need a third person because they bring enough nerdiness they can. I like the sound of the voice and I like, you know, their perspective on stuff. Like I think my perfect booth might be like Boog and Cone, but maybe Eduardo Perez to add sort of he knows different people, he talks to different people, you know, as you said, sort of there's a kind of half the clubhouse, you know, that you don't talk to if you don't speak Spanish. So it's like, you know, having Eduardo Cone and Boog, I think, would just be kind of an amazing, amazing group. I gave a shout out to John Miller. His voice is, I think, really great. I like that booth. The Padres booth is interesting because they rag on each other a lot, and
they're really fun. Yeah,
they're kind of really fun, and like two dudes who are just like, you know, always ragging on each other. They're really fun. They're fun. Sometimes you'd be like, I'm not in on this inside joke, but if you are and you watch them a lot, you're like, oh yeah, I know this one. Yeah.
Yeah. They're one of the top boots. I think they're very interesting as well.
Somebody I haven't mentioned that you really like.
I think Yes does a pretty good job with their like rotating group. Especially cause they had Cone for a while. Mm-hmm. I liked Ken Singleton. I know he's not there anymore. I think he did a really good job. I think the now defunct Gary Thorne, Jim Palmer booth was awesome as well. You know, I think Gary Thorne just has that voice that we talked about where you're like, right, okay, I can listen to this guy. And Jim Palmer to me, you know, first off, he's a Hall of Famer. But second, he's not afraid to be critical. I like booths that aren't afraid to be critical of what's going on the field, because I think fans want that, right? Like if you're a fan of the game and your team's playing terribly, you want the announcers to admit that, to say that. You don't want them to be like, well, down 12 to nothing, but they've got a chance here in the ninth. Like, you don't want that.
How do you feel about we?
I think it's fine for TV, podcasters, radios, those people to say we.
They are employed by the team, I guess.
Yes. When people like you and I are saying we, I have a real problem with
that. It hits me a little bit wrong, you know. And I guess I am going to be critical, but he's like probably like Hall of Fame level. So I think it's okay to be a little bit critical. Like Hawk Harrelson's sort of bit, you know, was very sort of homerous. I thought like there's very a lot of homerism, and like it almost seemed like there was a fan in the answering the game, which I guess some people like. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people who love Hawk Harrelson. So it's like, you know, I know that there's people I personally would rather have. I sort of chew a little bit more to the analysis. I want analysis. I want sort of like a little bit more like, you know, level-headed analysis coming out of it, and the ability maybe sometimes to be critical of the team. Yeah. If homerism you can get from like, you know, the team's Twitter account, you know, like,
yeah, but fans watching still want the announcers to be rooting for that team, to be pulling for their team. Right. Otherwise it has more negative. If you're straight neutral, I think it becomes, people think it's a negative broadcast. So you have to still shade.
It's true. Homer. I think Dave Sims, I think does a pretty good job of that. I mean, he's had some pretty legendary calls where you feel like, you know, he's a fan that's super excited and he's like happy, you know, so you feel his happiness, but he can also, you know, do some analysis and stay sort of keep his nose clean, in other words. But yeah, I wanted to throw Dave Sims out there, as I have a lot of respect for him. But
he's terrific. He's terrific. Dan Dickerson, another one with the Tigers, the radio call, Miguel Cabrera. Go listen to it if you haven't already. It will give you chills. Watch the video of it. Really, really, there's some really, really good radio people. I love walking my dog listening to a baseball game on the radio. I don't care if that makes me 95 years old.
Yeah, there was a really interesting move in Chicago where Len Casper used to call the games on TV and then moved over to radio. And I just was like, that seems crazy, but did talk to him about it. And he was kind of like, you know, now if they make the World Series and win, I get to do the call. You know, the TV announcers, they stop calling games in the postseason, but radio doesn't. And he also just thought that he liked the cadence of radio calls and just thought he would like to do that. So, you know, there is a big difference between the two.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day, crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants, an upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads, an ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLBSHOW.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Do we have a name for our winners of the week, our players of the week?
We do. Oh, sure. That would be a Derek question, but yeah. He's not here.
Yeah, well, we do have an award. At some point, we may or may not send packs from their, what is it, the year they were born?
Yes.
Baseball card packs to them. Mm-hmm. So let's not pick anybody too old. but I've got the leaderboard open for the hitters of the week this week. Okay. By WAR, the leaders were Manny Machado, Jose Altuve, Ketel Marte are up there. But I put forth to you the two biggest ones, I think, in terms of story, RBI, home runs, just what they've done this week beyond sort of a WAR number. And the two numbers that I come up with are Manny Margot, who had a 3-homer, 4 stolen base, 11 RBI, 478 week. And Josh Naylor, who hit 417 with 3 homers and 14 RBI, including that just crazy-ass game where he hit a grand slam to tie it in the ninth. And then he also hit a go-ahead homer in the 10th. So, or the 11th, I forget exactly. And so I think it's really between those two, unless I miss someone that you want to do some love.
Yeah, I'm going to add one more to that. I'm going to add Brewers first baseman Rowdy Tellez.
Yeah.
I mean,
we love Rowdy here.
8 RBIs versus the Reds on Wednesday.
That's right.
He set a Brewers franchise record. It was.
Oh, and he's not in my numbers yet. He's not in my numbers yet because they don't update immediately. That's funny.
He drove in 12. Him and Margot both over the past week. I think I've driven in like 12.
Yeah, runs. Rowdy's had a couple big games this week. I think he had a 2-homer game early in the week.
So I'd add him.
He's such a fun guy too.
Here's the thing about Machado. I think he's not getting enough attention for, I think we talked about this in previous pods, like the consistency.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a finalist, I think, for Player of the Week a couple times. This might be his third time if we make him a finalist.
So. I know. So he hasn't had like one huge week, but he's just been really good every week. And I think if we were voting tomorrow on MVP, NL MVP, he'd be one of the finalists, if not the guy, right?
Yeah, I think he's the favorite for the MVP right now. But you know, when you're on a weekly, this is something we also struggle with when we're talking about this, is like that the expectations versus, you know, like it's kind of cool when Manny Margot has a week like this, you know, and Josh Naylor kind of just establishing himself and like putting himself out there. If Naylor had had some of the seasons that Manny Machado's had before, then we might not even vote for him. We'd just be like, well, yeah, Naylor had a good week, but Manny Margot, you know, Rowdy Tellez, you know, we kind of have this like shiny new object thing that we and everybody are guilty of. But at the same time, you know, Manny Machado is probably going to get season long hardware from like the big wigs, you know, like he's probably going to get like BBWAA hardware. He's going to be on the finalist for that. And maybe somebody like Manny Margot or Josh Naylor is not going to get any hardware for their season, you know? So, and then I just look at that one standout performance where, you know, Rowdy, his came in a little bit more of a blowout. Manny Margot did like kind of keep his team in games, but that Josh Naylor game, I mean, to tie, like it's the ninth inning and they needed 4 runs and you're like, oh, he's not going to hit a grand slam. Oh, he hit a grand slam. Yeah. And then his celebration, Yes. Celebration was so good.
Yes. If you haven't seen it yet, also Google that. Add this. You should be like making a list. I feel like we've told you a bunch of things you need to absolutely watch. Add
the
Josh Naylor's Celebration.
Google list.
You know, the stuff you got to see, because hearing us talk about it isn't nearly as cool as watching it.
Yeah, if only we were a rights holder. Yeah, then you'd see, like, he's losing it. he is on another planet. He's screaming. Yes. In fact, if you didn't know the context, you might think he was angry, but he is just
correct
out there. So I think are we in agreement? We're giving it to Josh Naylor this week.
Yes, we are. But if next week we're still talking about Manny Machado, I think we
gotta give him one. That's right. If he keeps being a finalist, we gotta give him one.
You got to do it, because it's like, you know, I know he's worried about winning a World Series and maybe the MVP, but, you know, I can assure you that he's going to be like, what do I have to do to be at the top of the 3-0 show? Like, how much more do I have to do to be named the player of the week from the 3-0 show? You know, so Manny, if you're listening, I'm sure you're listening. We have you in mind.
And we've got the exact same, the exact same situation over on the pitching side. I've got the leaderboard up from the 3rd of May to the 11th, and Carlos Rodon is number one. And I feel like we've already talked about him like 2 or 3 times as being the pitcher of the week.
Yeah, and like, when are we setting this? Because how do we not give it to Detmers? How do we not give it to the guy who has a no-no?
Yeah, that's
if
crazy.
If you can't make it after getting a no-no, are you ever gonna make more of
that's
this?
Crazy. You know, what's funny? You mentioned that he only had the 2 strikeouts, right?
Yes.
His WAR, including yesterday, so including the no-hitter, his WAR in the last week is 16th. And I think it's partially because WAR in Fangraphs is built on homers, strikeouts, and walks. Now, he limited the walks and the homers, but he didn't add a bunch of strikeouts. So his FIP for the week is 339. That's easily the highest of anybody in the top 14. And so, you know, that's really kind of a problem of WAR, I would say. I use WAR. I love Fangraphs. I just don't think an FIP-based WAR captures, especially when you're trying to storytell like this. You know, it's not really, we shouldn't be sorting the leaderboard for WAR and just handing out to the top. But, you know, it is kind of, it does ask you, like, what should we be sorting for, you know?
Yeah, it does kind of reinforce the idea that numbers help reinforce what we see sometimes, right? Sometimes they can be a deal break, like a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like in this example, I think WAR is also better used offensively. I think it's always struggled to kind of gauge pitcher value, right? More so.
Yeah. Because there's these big, huge decisions you have to make, and every site has made the decision differently when it comes to the role of defense in pitching. So, like, you know, Fangraphs did home runs, strikeouts, and walks because they're saying those are the cleanest things that the fielders had nothing to do with, and that's what the pitchers have control over. So that's how we're going to judge them. And then when it comes to the ball in play, Baseball Reference and Baseball Perspectives have made totally different decisions about how to award the value of a ball in play to the pitcher and the fielder. So it's really complicated. But the one thing that WAR does do that makes it really hard. So let's say, okay, we got Reed Detmers. He pitched 13 innings in the last week, right? With a 1.98 ERA. That's awesome. Well, guess what? There are 2 guys ahead of him that have a 0 ERA. Zach Wheeler pitched 7 2/3 innings with 0. Well, that's 7 2/3 innings. That's not 2 starts. Well, Michael Kopech had 2 starts, 10 innings, 0 ERA. So do we like that better? I don't think so. It's 2 starts of 5 innings where we have Detmers pitched a whole 9. So it's, you're going to make – this is a funny thing about numbers is you're going to make a decision at some point, and you're going to have to make a decision as a human being with the numbers in front of you. And you can't just let the numbers and we're not awarding the WAR of the week, award and just giving it to Carlos Rodon. So I'm going to throw the finalists up as Rodon, Michael Kopech. Those are 2 really awesome starts. I'm going to throw a Carlos Carrasco on there, a 1.23 ERA and 2 starts. And then Reed Detmers has to go on there. So I think we give it to the young boy. I didn't mean that. He's a kid.
He's young. I agree. I think we gave it to him as well. And you know what else was really cool was the entire Angels. Did you see this? The whole team stayed and watched his post-game interview.
Nice.
They were all in the dugout. Another thing to add to your list of things to watch this week. Yeah, there's a great photo of the whole team watching this guy in the dugout do his post-game interview. Just like, it seems like the Angels are having a lot of fun. They're winning, which helps.
Yeah, and really I think that fun. I think Ohtani is important to this because he's, you know, as he's come into himself as a star in this league, he's letting people into his personality, which is very different than Mike Trout. Mike Trout is a little bit more like business. You know, he wants to win the game. He's paying really close attention to the game. And, you know, it's about the game. Whereas Ohtani, like, has these little moments where he, like, blow in a player's ear or, like, you know, do a little weird dance in the dugout. He has some fun. And I think that helps lighten it up a little bit, you know, because you always look to your two position, like the two highest paid sort of the two position player stars are usually the leaders of their clubhouse. And so having Ohtani as a foil a little bit to the Trout veteran leadership, I think has been a good thing for that team. But yeah, Reed Detmers, also nice thing, born in 1999. So the pack will be super cheap and have some good players in it that we actually remember. so good on all fronts there. Congratulations to Reed Detmers and Josh Naylor for players of the week. I think that's what we're calling it, but that's an awful, awful name, and we need to do better than that.
We do. We've got to get sponsored by a beer company or something. Keep it really on brand.
That's right. Or something to do with the 3-0 swing take. I don't know. But that wraps it up for us here at the 3-0 show. Thanks for listening. Thank you to you, Britt. Do you have anything to add here at the end?
No, I was going to say, if you're going to be DVR, then I will deliver your traditional line at
Ooh.
The end here. Really throw everybody into disarray on their Thursday.
All right. Well, a subscription to The Athletic is just $1 a month at theathletic.com/baseball show. And you can enjoy the Frank Lopez story, which is amazing, or any of our pieces there once you subscribe. Thanks for listening. And that does it for us today. We'll be back with you next week.
On the 3-0 show, you always have the green light.